We're checking out drive-through Halloween attractions on this Wisconsin weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Trick-or-treating will look a lot different this year, and we'll get into the specifics of that later in the hour. There are creepy driving options out there that offer scares while maintaining that social distance. And on the friendlier side, there are offerings for drive-through Halloween lights. Do you enjoy haunted houses? Are you trying out a contactless drive-through Halloween experience? Tell us about it, 800-642-1234. Beth Heidorn is executive director of the Racine Zoo, which is offering a Halloween glow. Beth, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for being here. We also have Lori Dubchuk, who is executive director of the Norskadalen Nature and Heritage Center in Coon Valley. And it's Ghoulies in the Coolies tradition is going drive-through. Lori, welcome to you.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and good morning to both of you.
Well, good morning to you. And Lori, I want to just say that this, this tradition that you've had, the Ghoulies and the Coolies, has been for decades. How are you adapting it?
Well, the traditional Ghoulies and the Coolies is probably about 30 years old. And we have a historic homestead on our property, and we decorate it to be a little ghoulish, at night. It's historic, so there's no electricity. So we have to be a little creative about getting the lights out there and everything. But then during the summer, we grow about 400 to 500 pumpkins, and we have a massive pumpkin carving weekend. And then we carve all of those pumpkins into jack-o'-lanterns, and then we put those along the trails throughout the hills. And just in case you can't see me, I'm actually directing this with my hands as I describe it to you. So we have about a mile-long hiking trail that's lit only by 400 to 500 jack-o'-lanterns. And it just really beckons all the spooks to come out of the hills every year and scare the hikers that are on there. Except the family-friendly night, we ask them not to come out for family-friendly trick-or-treating. But so we have three nights of hiking through, jack-o'-lantern lit woods, which can be spooky on itself. This year, clearly, we can't do that because, again, we just can't do that. But to not have Ghoulies and the Coolies was completely unthinkable. So we're making it a drive-through. Our driveway is a mile in length from the time you enter the property until the time that you leave the property, and we've dubbed it the Morbid Mile. And we are lighting up the woods again, not with jack-o'-lanterns. We'll have jack-o'-lanterns, but not so many. And then we're working to get lights out in places. We'll have some animated things to entice the spooks to come down out of the hills again. And that we'll have some, I think we're having some movie things happening. We're having, we have a chapel on the Morbid Mile. And while we're not doing anything to the chapel, but we are having a cemetery right next to the chapel, which is always good.
Certainly setting the scene there and doing some creative adapting. How about you,
Beth?
That's
right.
Yeah. And Beth, what's different about how Racine Zoo is celebrating Halloween?
Yeah, well, this is our first annual a drive-through. We've never had a drive-through event at the zoo before, but we also last year we had a big light festival and people really liked it. So they're like, "Can you do something with lights this year?" And we're like, "Okay, well, let's figure out how we can do this." But we're restricted on physical numbers that can be at the zoo at any given time, but we're not restricted when people are very social distanced in their own vehicles. So we have a large, wide pathways. So ours is a half-mile drive from the time you enter the zoo until the time you exit. So you are getting, for a lot of people, it's parts of the zoo that they may not necessarily walk through. Sometimes people forget that we have a low road and we have animals all over the zoo. Now, the animals are not necessarily out, but you are able to drive through that spaces. And we have over 500,000 LED lights,
wow.
26 different displays, 2,500 feet of lighting ropes. Last night we had hundreds and hundreds of people there, and it worked. It was so magical because the kids would as the parents are driving in, you could hear the windows go down and the kids are like, oh my gosh. And I was like, you know, that's the stuff that just melts your heart.
Yeah.
Because we really are a family friendly place, and we obviously have adult only events too, but we really wanted to make sure that we gave people a safe way, you know, just like the Nature Center is doing, to get people to still come out, because people still want to come out. People love Halloween.
Yeah.
And everyone loves lights. So that is, has been very helpful. We've been open for two nights now, and we are excited, and we're happy to hear the screams and the coos and oh my gosh from the kids. So it's been good so far.
We are talking about Drive Through Halloween attractions. That's Beth Heidorn, who is executive director of the Racine Zoo. Lori Dubchuk is executive director of the Norskadalen Nature and Heritage Center, and they're taking their tradition as well, Ghoulies and the Coolies, to a drive through approach. You can join in. Are you going through a drive through experience for Halloween? What are you planning? 800-642-1234. I was wondering, you know, Beth, what do the animals think of all those lights?
Well, actually, most of them have gone to bed, shall we say, by the time that the event starts. So we are 6 to 9 Wednesday through Sunday. But when you're driving and you start off your drive, you will go by a couple of animal exhibits. We have a great horned owl, and we've got a red-tailed hawk that are watching the cars as they go by. So people were able to see them last night.
Well, someone's got to keep an eye out.
Exactly, and they're perfect for that. But most of our other animals are all back, because where you can drive is not necessarily where you're looking at animals at an exhibit space.
Sure, sure.
So, but it does give people that have never been to the zoo a really good perspective. We're 28 acres, and we are right on Lake Michigan. So the location is phenomenal to begin with. So that's, we've already seen people that have sent, in just 2 days, have already sent, I get texts on my phone, that have already bought memberships because they thought the zoo was great just location wise. And so that's, you know, that's a really nice compliment to the zoo and this event. So we're excited. The animals are, they're happy because, you know, they know that the support of the people coming through helps feed them and their animal care. So that's another reason we did a drive through. We got to get creative on how to continue
to fundraise,
to generate revenue.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Lori, I want to talk theme here for a moment, because you have a Norwegian tale of the faceless woman that you're incorporating into Ghoulies and the Coolies.
Mm-hmm. We are, you know, Norwegian folklore tends to be a bit dark, you know, and I didn't know this until we started looking at different resources. But there is an ancient folklore about a faceless woman that haunts the halls of a castle right on the cliffs at the ocean of the edge of Norway. And so we have created a facsimile of Burma shave signs, for lack of a better explanation. So even before you enter the property, we will have this tale of the faceless woman displayed on a series of road signs. So hopefully, as you wait in line to enter the property, you can keep track of things on all of these signs. There's a total of 12 or 13 different signs, all in rhyme, all explaining this kind of dark history of the faceless woman. And then rumor has it that the faceless woman's going to appear on the trails at Ghoulies as you drive through.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Huh. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. We're talking drive-through Halloween attractions amid COVID. And we have Lori Dubchuk, who is head of the Norskadalen Nature and Heritage Center. She's taking Ghoulies and the Coolies into drive-through mode. We have Beth Heidorn, who heads up the Racine Zoo, which is offering an illuminated drive-through experience. A shout out to Old World Wisconsin's Family Fun Drive this month, and Boo at the Zoo at Milwaukee County Zoo later this month, a merry, not scary, they say, 30-minute drive-through. Are you checking out a drive-through attraction? Are you designing one? Join in, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more Wisconsin Weekend here on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back. We're checking out drive-through Halloween attractions, you know, the safe, socially distanced, frightening good times from inside the car. It is Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Drive-through events promise to be just as terrifying, like maybe driving through a horror movie, if that's your jam. Are you trying a drive-through event? How are you adapting your Halloween fun? It's 800-642-1234. We have Lori Dubchuk, who is Executive Director of the Norskadalen Nature and Heritage Center. Beth Heidorn is here, Executive Director of the Racine Zoo. Both are offering drive-through experiences, and they stay with us. So, Beth, you have like 26 displays and, 20 large trees that are wrapped in lights. Can you explain what the displays look like a little bit?
Yeah, so we have a couple of different kinds. So in our amphitheater, we normally do large concerts in the summer. And, of course, we weren't able to do those. But we actually have a skeleton band that is playing in the amphitheater. And I was like, that at least I have that. Pretending we have a concert going on. We have a pumpkin scarecrow that's driving a tractor. We have a haunted house. We've got a large pumpkin patch. We have got a 96-foot drive-through light tunnel, which has 46 different patterns. So it may you may see a couple patterns as you drive through it. So that's considered a big display. We have a whole wall of pumpkins. We have bats. And then the trees that are wrapped are large, very large trees. So they go all the way. I don't know how those guys got the stuff all the way to the top of those, some of those branches, but it's phenomenal. And it's just the amount of time that it's taken to get all of those things in there, about 950 man hours.
Did it take to set up all these decorations?
Yeah, it was about a 2 hour or a 2 week time frame from the time we started, and it was very quick from the time we made the decision till the time that we were able to finish all the lights going up. So, but it's a big labor of love. I think it looks phenomenal, but it's those types of things that are the displays. There's a bunch of skeletons, corn stalks, and everything that's all lit up, kind of those two-dimensional things. And then in the trees, the lights that are there are all programmed to have different patterns of colors that are going up or down or changing colors as you're driving through. So it kind of really illuminates that area. And then you can turn your radio to a station that just plays this spooky little music for you as you go through that particular area. So that's been really kind of fun, too, because we've never done that before either.
Yeah, full ambiance. Lori, for both of you, you're trying something new. There's got to be a learning curve here and trying to figure out how to make this work. What have you learned so far, Lori?
Well, we're out in the woods. We don't have electric out there. So how to power the lights, how to power some of the animated things. And honestly, once it gets dark in the valley, it's really dark. So being able to illuminate things so that people are safe as they drive through, and then working with volunteers to be sure that they stay in safe places and things like that. We actually have partnered with Vernon Electric Co-op, and they're helping us with some of the electric issues. We've partnered with Festival Food, who is helping us with a couple other things. But that has been a huge learning curve, too. And then, frankly, there's just a lot of space. And how are we going to fill this space so that it really is the experience that people expect from Ghoulies and the Coolies, so that they're not disappointed, so that we're doing something that allows families to come out and be together and experience a family weekend. You're right, it's been a huge learning curve, and nothing is the same as what we have done before. There wasn't anything that we could draw on from 30 years of props and exhibits for Ghoulies and the Coolies to transform it into the drive-through. So everything is brand new. Everything has not been seen before. We're building Gothic cemetery stones because, again, Norwegian folklore is a little dark. So, we're building all of these tombstones like that. And, we want to be respectful, again, of the history of what we have. And at the same time, I think we're going to have a bride and groom around the church as if they just got married, a celebration on one side of that. And, so being creative with what we have in place and being able to build off of that in a way that that families will enjoy.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Lori Dubchuk, who's executive director of the Norskadalen Nature and Heritage Center. Beth Heidorn is here, executive director of the Racine Zoo. We're sampling drive-through Halloween experiences and taking your questions about them. 800-642-1234. Lori, I understand there's going to be some animation or objects that drop out of the sky. I don't want to give too much away, but what's that about?
Well, again, you know, we're driving through and we've got all of these massive trees and you know, we are all, shall I say, using all the creative energies of our maintenance staff, who are phenomenal guys. There isn't anything that they can't build. They look at us a little crazy when we tell them what we want to do, but then they somehow make it come together. So there are some places in which some, you know, some things might just surprise you by coming down the hill real quick or something like that. rest assured, though, that there will be space between your car and anything so that nothing, you know, nothing will happen to your vehicle or anything like that. But you will be surprised at some of these.
Yeah. And Beth, how do you proceed through the exhibit? You know, what is, how fast are you going? Slow are you going? What is that like?
Yeah. So our rules is 3 miles per hour. And we have people shut their lights off when they hit a certain point after they've entered the gate. And then it is a 3 mile per hour. And everyone really, you know, no one wants anything to happen to their car. So everyone's very respectful on the distance that they were traveling through the area to make sure that no vehicles are tied up. There's a few kind of spots where it could get busy. It all depends on how many cars we have on property at a given time, but people know how to self-regulate, and the 3 miles an hour is perfect. And some drive a smidge slower because they really are taking pictures. They're looking at all sorts of the lights so that they can see them from various angles, because when you are on what we call our low road, which is what you're entering, you're at a different perspective than when you make a turn at the end of that low road to come back on the high road. So then you can see things from a different perspective that you just saw from the low road or the high road. So it's been very interesting. And we had this one group of ladies go through the first night, and then they came back and did it right away. They went through twice on the first night because they had so much fun. And I'm like, okay, that's great. That's great. That doesn't happen very often. But I think it's a good testament to how we're trying to get people in there. And as Lori said, we've got to do family-friendly things to the best of our ability to get people out, because they want to do it. And drive-through is the safest social distance you can do with your family group.
Sounds like such a super sensory event, too. Something that just is really going to make your jaw drop.
Yeah, exactly. And we're right off Lake Michigan, so we get that kind of eerie, a little bit of that marine fog coming in. And so it really, I don't even need a fog machine. It works great.
So I want to step aside from the drive-thrus for just a moment to ask you both a personal question. You are both nonprofit executives. How is your organization making it in these really difficult times? And Lori, if you don't mind going first.
Our donors, our members have stepped up. It's not easy because we've not had any education programs. We've not had any bus tours come through. We've not had any of the events that normally fund our operations. But when I put a note out to our membership in, early April, they answered the call, and they have been tremendously supportive. I have to say that the CARES Act has come through the Wisconsin Humanities Organization, and that has been a godsend. There have been other grant opportunities that have also stepped up, some local things here. People in the La Crosse area are exceptionally generous, and through the La Crosse Community Foundation, there has been quite a bit of help for that, not just for us, but for all the organizations. You know, so we're okay. Now, I say that with a question mark, because one thing can make that difference, you know.
And I want to allow Beth. Beth, what about you? How is the zoo doing?
Yeah, I appreciate that. And just like Lori, we've had our membership and our donors step up. We also have had some federal dollars from the PPP money, and which was phenomenal and saved us. And we were closed for 74 days to the public. So, but we have had to get very creative with our programs. We did not stop doing tours. I mean, programming for, we had summer camp, a safe summer camp this year with reduced numbers. Parents really appreciated that. We do events all the time, wine tasting, beer tastings. We've done them both in person since we've reopened, and we do them virtually. So we are trying to, obviously we've lost money this year for revenue, but we have to get creative, and our drive-through is one of those. Or even our Boo at the Zoo that's coming up is very safe and friendly because we still want kids to trick-or-treat if they can. So everything we're doing is thoughtful and deliberate in regards to the safety of our guests and our animals, because they weren't furloughed. I still got to feed these animals and take care of them each and every day with an amazing animal care staff. So closing expenses was really not an option for us at the zoo. Everything, well, we still operate at 100% with what we have to do.
All the best to you. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. And Beth, I'd really like to come over and see your zoo. It sounds absolutely phenomenal.
And I will come and see your place because I'm a Norwegian. So let's do that.
Oh, I love that.
All right.
Oh, Lori Dubchuk, Executive Director of the North Skidala Nature and Heritage Center, with Beth Heidorn of Racine Zoo. We'll be back after a news update on the Ideas Network. The question families with kids are asking this month, how should we do Halloween when cases of COVID continue to spike in Wisconsin? That's what we're asking here on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recently released guidance on Halloween saying that going door to door for candy is high risk. How should we handle our eager trick-or-treaters who just crave some normalcy during Halloween? We're at 800-642-1234. Malia Jones is an epidemiologist with the Applied Population Laboratory at UW-Madison. Malia, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me on.
So why is trick-or-treating itself, going door-to-door, why is that high risk?
Yeah, well, what the CDC said was that the traditional, the usual plan for going door-to-door is high risk because it involves, at least in our neighborhood, a lot of kids bunching up together in big groups and pretty close contact between the person who's handing out the candy and the kids who are getting the candy. But I think for once, epidemiologists have some good news here. It's pretty easy to modify trick-or-treat so that it is very safe. And so I think it's possible to have trick-or-treat and still be COVID safe with a couple of modifications.
Yeah, take us through those modifications. What do you see?
Yeah, so I think that, first of all, if you're the person who's handing out candy, you should make it possible for kids to keep their distance from you and don't let them bunch up around your door. And that means using tongs or grabbers to hand out the treats, wearing a mask, and also, if possible, making it one way so that kids can come in one way and go out the other way so that they're not passing each other through some kind of a narrow sidewalk up to your doorway. And I think that people handing out treats should also do it outside. We're hopefully going to have warmer weather this year than we did last year, and it'll be a lot safer if everyone is outside rather than at the doorway.
What?
And then the people who are the kids should also be wearing a mask that covers their nose and face.
And not just a mask that's part of their costume mask.
Yeah, so the CDC said that costume masks don't substitute for a fabric face covering. But the truth is that I think what they mean is that many costume masks just cover the upper part of the face, your eyes, which is obviously not going to help with disease transmission at all. So you should wear a mask, and it's fine if it's part of your costume, as long as it is covering your nose and your mouth. And ideally, it would be, you know, a standard cloth mask like we're all becoming accustomed to wearing.
Some haunted houses are currently operating with their regular season with some changes. What can you say about haunted houses?
Well, what we are increasingly learning about COVID-19 is that it's most readily spread in crowded indoor situations, especially where people are screaming or singing or even just loud talking. And so I am really worried about these indoor haunted houses. The fact that they're indoors, the fact that some people might not be wearing masks, and the screaming is actually can produce a lot of droplets from inside deep in our lungs. And so I do think those are very high risk, and people should be avoiding those. That said, there are a lot of ways to do Halloween traditions that are outdoors that are really very low risk. So haunted forests are fine. You know, if you can go to a haunted forest instead of a haunted house, that's outdoors. You can keep your group small, keep your distance from other people, and wear a mask. And that's going to be fine. You know, corn mazes, pumpkin patches are all okay, too.
You know, we used to do trunk or treat years ago with our kids. And what are the implications of trunk or treat, where you go from car to car, trunk to trunk, if you will, where there's candy?
Uh-huh. So I think that trunk or treat is fine as long as you can do it in a way where people are spaced well apart.
Okay.
Right? We have learned that what's called fomite transmission of the virus from surfaces, is not a huge deal. And so I think that it's fine to do that as long as the cars can be spaced pretty far apart. People are not aggregating in big crowds. And, you know, if it's your car, you need to be standing well away from the kids who are getting candy out of it. And then everybody should be washing their hands before they handle candy. Part of wearing a mask means it's going to be very hard to eat candy on the road. And that'll help reduce the spread of germs too. So just wash your hands when you get home and make sure that there's plenty of space to spread those cars apart.
We're talking with Malia Jones, who's an epidemiologist with the Applied Population Laboratory at UW-Madison. She is also the editor of Dear Pandemic. It's a website and social media platform posting real information about COVID. And she's helping us navigate Halloween amid the pandemic, taking your questions about how you plan to Halloween, 800-642-1234. Malia, what about the candy itself? Should we be wiping down the wrappers or anything like that?
Yeah, so we still have not seen any good evidence of people catching COVID from handling the food that they intend to eat. And so I don't think that we need to be really obsessive about wiping off every piece of candy. We just need to have clean hands. And so I think that it's important to not eat candy on the road because especially, you know, I have little kids. They're kind of messy about it. There's a lot of spit involved and things get kind of sticky.
That's I have no idea what you're talking about. No idea.
Yeah. So, you know, wait. Also, the mask would have to come off to do that. And
right.
So wait to get home and wash your hands. And I don't think we need to be really obsessive about washing off all of the candy.
So, you know, what are some creative ways that we can give out candy as kids who do want to go door to door? Can you kind of maybe help us envision trying not to have kids come to the door? How could we do this outside?
Yeah. So Halloween's my favorite holiday. I have tons of ideas. Personally, I am going to dress as a pageant queen and stand on a float in my front yard and toss candy to children.
That's brilliant.
I think I've seen a lot of really clever ideas to build some kind of candy delivery system, like a chute out of a PVC pipe where you could stand. If you have steps that go up to your door, you can attach a piece of PVC pipe to your railing and then stand at the top and the kids could hold their bag at the bottom and the candy could just shoot right down to them. I've also seen someone had a really clever idea to tie pieces of candy to wooden stakes and put them all over their front yard so that you can, you know, kids could sort of come and pick one while you stand far away from them. CDC also suggested just having a grab-and-go table so mm-hmm. you could set up a table near the sidewalk and stand well away from it while kids go by and you can still greet your neighbors that way without getting too close to them.
You know, like, people are going to go all Rube Goldberg here and build all these contraptions.
I can't wait. I'm so excited.
It really takes Halloween to a whole new level of creativity.
Yeah, we've got to get creative here. We're just in a make it work moment. We're going to make it work.
And certainly wrapped candy still our best option.
Yeah, wrapped candy is always our best option just for basic food safety. And so I would suggest, I think like many people do in previous years, to stick with wrapped candy that is, manufactured and closed.
What advice do you have about wearing gloves or costumes with gloves?
Yeah, so gloves are not recommended to prevent the transmission of COVID or other germs actually in the community, because when you're wearing gloves, you feel like you're protected, but in fact, the gloves get really dirty and you just end up spreading a lot of germs all around on the gloves. So wearing gloves like to the grocery store is not a great idea. If it's cold out or your costume involves gloves, it's fine to wear them. I would say, again, just wash your hands when you get home and keep your hands clean as a general advice for keeping yourself safe during the pandemic.
So let's take a call now. Becca is joining us from Elk Mound this morning. Hi, Becca.
Good morning. I love Halloween, and my husband and I usually have a really big Halloween party the weekend before where lots of families come together. That's not happening this year, so we were trying to come up with some new ideas on how to deliver candy like you were just talking about. And one thing that we've done in the past as an ease of access was to create a frame out of scrap wood, 2x4s, and then instead of putting a piece of glass in the frame, we attached chicken wire like you would see on a chicken coop, and then we make treat bags and we clothespin the bags to the chicken wire. So we're going to use that same idea this year, and we live out in the country in a little neighborhood, so we're going to set it up down by our mailbox so anybody passing by can self-serve.
Oh, that sounds...
That's a great idea.
Yeah, that sounds adorable, too. Very practical. I could see that for other applications as well.
Yeah.
Becca, how does it feel not to do the traditions you normally have done?
Man, it started out because I'm terrified of being afraid. I don't like the jump scares. So by having the party at our house, I always was able to know where those were. definitely, it's a different time of year for us. We're really big on celebrating the season, so we've gone to the apple orchard and we're thinking about doing a corn maze, but trying to do that in a socially responsible way as well as continuing those traditions with our two young girls. So it's definitely going to look different, and it'll be one for our memory books, but we still plan on celebrating with a little family fire and with maybe a projected movie outside. But definitely, it's not going to be the same. We usually have about 60 people at our house. So we're going to miss it, but it's important.
Oh, Becca, thank you for sharing your plans. Malia Jones is here, an associate scientist in the Applied Population Laboratory at UW-Madison. She's helping us manage risk with Halloween as COVID-19 surges. Taking your questions, what do you have to know about safety precautions in Halloween activities? How concerned are you about festivities? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It is Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Malia Jones. She's a UW epidemiologist helping us keep the fun in Halloween while trying to lessen the spread of COVID-19. The CDC lists trick-or-treating as a higher risk activity, along with trunk-or-treats, costume parties, and haunted houses. But there are other Halloween traditions that present a lower risk, and we're learning about those. Still time for your questions, 800-642-1234. Malia, how likely is it that COVID will spread if children go door-to-door? What are the risks at Halloween?
Well, I think that the main risk really is that that traditional close interaction that you have in that moment when you're handing candy directly to a kid, you know, you get pretty close to them when they come to your door. And also the risk that the kids are fairly close to each other as they're walking around the neighborhood. So I think those are the main sources of risk, and they're really pretty easy to manage. We just have to get a little creative about keeping our distance from the kids while we're handing candy to them. I thought Becca's idea to let people have a grab-and-go candy station at the end of her driveway was a terrific one. And you can even stand there and greet your neighbors and say hello to them while that happens, as long as you keep your distance. So I think that it's pretty easy to manage. I think, you know, I know in some areas trick-or-treat's already been canceled, and I know that some people are planning to do some alternative fun in order to, you know, have something fun for their kids to do on Halloween. And some of those ideas I've heard about are having a neighborhood contest to decorate your home for Halloween. You could do a scavenger hunt or bingo as you walk around your neighborhood and look for Halloween decorations or items. Or you could even trick-or-treat inside your own house or do some kind of a scavenger hunt or like an Easter egg style candy hunt in your own home.
Yeah, sure. Or in your yard, or maybe if there's a green space there. So what about like corn mazes? I mean, because people go there, or festivals and pumpkin patches, how should you be kind of keeping an eye on numbers?
Well, I've seen at least the corn maze that we went to had a limit on how many people they were letting in, and they had a system to pay in advance so that there wasn't a queue of people waiting together to get in. And so that worked pretty well. There were, you know, the crowds were pretty small. I would suggest trying to go during off hours, and it seemed fairly well managed. I would say for anything, if you're in a situation where you thought this was, you know, you go to a pumpkin patch or apple picking or whatever it is, and it seems like the crowds are big and it's not being managed well, you could just leave, you know, ask for your money back and exit, because I do think those crowded situations are higher risk. That said, we have seen very few events where people got sick outdoors when they were wearing masks and not doing something like screaming. So I'm not too worried about crowds at pumpkin patches or corn mazes.
Malia, what do you think of this surge in Wisconsin?
The surge is really, gosh, it's just tragic. I mean, to see our state have this huge outbreak of a preventable disease is just, it's a little mind-boggling as an epidemiologist. It's really bad.
What can be done at this point? What are you thinking and working on with your colleagues?
Well, you know, what I'm working on with my colleagues, I spend a lot of my time doing the work on Dear Pandemic, which is a website where we try to deliver practical advice for how to manage all of the sometimes conflicting information that we're getting about the pandemic. And so, you know, that's the main work that I'm doing. I think what we can do as a state is really pretty clear. It's what we've been asked to do all along, which is prevent the spread of the disease by wearing masks and keeping our distance from one another. I know I'm just as tired of it as everybody else is. It's exhausting. But at this point, really our only option, besides letting our hospital system get completely overwhelmed and running out of ventilators, is to engage in those prevention activities and stop spreading disease around the state. So that's what has to be done.
Malia, thank you for joining us, and best of luck on your float.
Thank you.
And perfect your wave.
It's gonna be fun. I've been practicing, yes.
Malia Jones is an epidemiologist with the Applied Population Laboratory at UW-Madison. She's also the editor of Dear Pandemic. It's a website and social media platform posting real information about COVID. We have a link to it along with the CDC guidelines on Halloween. That's at WPR.org/mornings. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. The International Crane Foundation, based in Baraboo, works around the world to save cranes. In a story from our archives, producer Brianne Chasseau spent a day at its headquarters learning about its conservation work with whooping cranes.
How long ago did the chick hatch?
20 minutes, maybe. 15 minutes? It's just out. We asked this chick not to hatch until this morning so that you can see it.
That's Bryant Tarr, curator of birds for the International Crane Foundation.
So this bird has been in the other room for 2 days now when it started peeping. Then it pipped, which is it makes that first little hole in the shell. And then it rests for about 24 hours. And then the next day it just saws its way around and pops out. And that's what just happened.
We're silent in the room where the chick is kept. Tarr lets me peek in the incubator at the chick after turning out the light so he or she can't see me. The chick, who has a June birthday, is damp, brown, and maybe a little bigger than a tennis ball, showing no signs yet of the snowy plumage it'll one day have. The chick will later be named Phantom, following this year's theme of naming the whooping crane chicks after Wisconsin lakes. She is part of the foundation's direct autumn release program, which began in 2005. Phantom will spend the next few months learning how to be a crane from scientists wearing crane suits. Costume rearing helps the chicks avoid imprinting on humans and is something the foundation began experimenting with in the 1980s.
My name is Marianne Wellington, and I am a lead aviculturist and a chick rearing supervisor.
Wellington's work includes spending the coming months, along with others, wearing white costumes mimicking whooping cranes and carrying MP3 players that play sounds a parent crane would make for the chicks. The costumes cover people from head to toe and include a puppet worn on one of the person's hands that resembles a crane's head. There's absolutely no talking.
I learned a lot from other species on what I should or shouldn't do in costume, or what I can and can't do in costume. When you're wearing a costume, your puppet is on your hand, and so you need to think about the fact that your hand acts like a head, and so your hand has to be looking at different things. So when an airplane goes over, you cock your head a little bit so that one eye is looking up at the airplane or at the hawk flying over. But if it's a hawk or something they're not sure about, they'll start watching longer and longer, and you're like, oh, what is that? And so you just need to learn to freeze. And so for me, it is more of a, if I think about it correctly, it's more of a zen interaction, trying to be a crane as much as I can.
In the fall, the whooping crane chicks are released near older whooping cranes so they can learn the migration route south.
It's a time of lots of emotions. So you're sad because you're letting these animals that you were working with so much, you get attached to them. It's hard not to. You get attached to them, so it's sad to see them go. But there's this fantastic feeling to see them fly. And I see them fly anyway. From day to day, taking them out, they fly, and it's amazing that they come back. It's just amazing. But to see them fly and be cranes in the wild, it's just fantastic.
In early November, 8 whooping crane chicks were released. 2 other chicks, one of which is Phantom, were kept because of their good genetics.
We are sorry to share the news that Brianne Chasseau passed away this week at the age of 31 after being diagnosed with cancer this year. All of us at Wisconsin Public Radio send our thoughts to her family and the many friends and colleagues who are mourning her loss. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.